The Engineering Commons is a podcast dedicated to the challenges that engineers encounter, regardless of which industry or field they work in on a regular basis. These can be overarching topics that affect us over our entire careers, or stories of everyday frustrations and how to deal with them. This is the show for January 31st, 2013, and it's about empathy. So, Jeff, when did you become such a cold, heartless bastard?
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, you heard me.
What kind of a question is that?
Well, I was telling you my problems earlier today, and you're like, ugh, how does this affect me? What do I care?
Well, exactly. What do I care? It's your problems. You deal with it.
You should care. I mean, you're supposed to be my friend, man. I mean, technically, you're like a coworker. I mean, no, we don't get paid for this, but you're like a coworker. So why don't you care about my problems? If I was buying something from you, you would care about that, wouldn't you?
Maybe. But what do you want from me? You want me to help solve the problems? Do you want me to turn on the analytical part of my brain and have that, you know, going full force and being of assistance? Or do you want my feelings? You want me to?
I don't want feelings. I just want you to understand me. I feel like I'm your wife here, Jeff. Why didn't you ever listen to me? Why?
Well, you know, I am an engineer.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah. There was a recent journal article that claims that engineering students have less empathy than students in other fields.
I don't know how to feel about that.
And so they don't really know at this point whether it's a matter of students who go into engineering have less empathy, or whether those with less empathy are drawn to engineering, or something about the engineering education makes engineers less empathetic. But there seems to be some relationship here that engineers are less empathetic, which makes them cold, heartless bastards.
Well, I guess I'm one then too, huh? Well,
I think we all have our levels of empathy are varied from individual to individual, just like our capability to say throw a baseball or to sing opera. You know, it varies from person to person.
Well, we should bring someone else on that knows what the hell we're talking about then, because maybe he can help.
I believe he probably could. We had him as a guest on a previous episode when we talked about recruiting. And since he has some engineering managerial experience, I thought he would be a good person to bring back on to talk about whether empathy was of any use as an engineer or as an engineering manager, or whether it was useless.
It's something you recruit for too,
or
right?
Something I mean, that would be another thing. That's right. So, welcome back to the Engineering Commons, Jim Heilman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, a lot of my career, of course, has been spent. Probably the majority has been spent in management. But I understand the comment that engineers seem to be a little bit less empathetic than people in other professions, such as medical, maybe law. I'm not sure there.
No.
But the thing I've found is that I think it's more of a perception problem than reality. Because, and I fell into this a lot as a manager, as an engineer, you're geared towards solving problems. That's really what engineers want to do. They want to solve a problem. They want you to get boxes from point A to point B as efficiently as possible, and that type of thing. And what happens so often when people come into your office or your cubicle with a problem or an issue and they want to sit there and talk about it, you sit there and think, well, oh my gosh, I need to be working on solving the A to B problem. I can't be doing this. I'm wasting my time. And also, probably a bigger problem, part of that is engineers just aren't they think they need to solve the individual's problem when they walk in. I know as a, especially when I was a maintenance manager, I told Jeff earlier today that I felt like that I should have a white collar on and a priest collar because I spent more time working on solving my maintenance people's problems than I did solving the maintenance problems in the plant. Huh. Although you kind of have to do that because an unhappy worker isn't going to be very productive. And if they've got a real personal issue, their personal problem, they're going to be unhappy. So empathy is really sorry for the phone call.
Someone's calling with their problems right now.
Somebody's calling.
Even now, you're on call, Jim.
Problem. Yeah.
Exactly. They say I need to tell you about my problem right now, and you have
being
to listen,
very
right?
Empathetic.
Exactly.
You're right.
Well, what about the recruiting side? I mean, so you know, is this something that I mean? So obviously, like Jeff said, you have a lot of experience on both the managerial and the recruiting side, but you know, is that something that employers even talk about? Is that something that, you know, they bring up? Well, I don't want someone who's just technically competent. I want someone who can, you know, listen to customers or listen to other departments. Is that something they look for?
Look for it in sales, but not as much when it comes to technical people.
Now, should they look for it?
I've never heard empathy brought up by a company yet as, as a criteria per se.
Yeah.
Although the ability to listen in sales is very important. And I have, you know, I have heard the ability to listen, which I think is probably could be construed as very close to empathy, if not empathy itself. And that's a familiar refrain.
Well, I've read that empathy has several factors. There are certain factors that encourage or retard empathy, that women are certainly more empathetic than men, that our levels of empathy tend to go up as we get older and as we gain more education, but that we also tend to be much more empathetic with those that share cultural traits, that share geographical backgrounds. And so one of the claims that is made is that we need engineers with greater levels of empathy so that they can work well with engineers from other parts of the world, those that come from other cultures, other geographical regions, other engineering backgrounds.
Right. Yeah. If you're working with an engineer in China who has an overbearing boss because it's part of the culture, right? Then it's, you know, you have to understand that some of their actions might be defined by that. You know, they might be driven by what the boss is saying and the actions they have to take around the office versus what actually makes sense. And so you have to empathize with that and then also help them save face and everything else like that.
I think that's a very valid point. And I do see that we do place people in China, and that is an issue, and Japan also. The saving face part is very important for them, much more so than us. But when I say us, the United States, but that is a very valid point.
So if no one is asking for, if none of the employers are talking about empathy directly, are they looking for it sort of without saying it directly? Are there hidden words that mean, you know, plays well with others, or do they not realize it's an issue, or do they not just not care?
I think they care, but I think it's like the ability to use Word. Everybody expects you to be able to use Word today. And I think everyone expects you to have a certain amount of empathy. It's just understood that you have it.
And in fact, both cases, really it's not always the case, right? It's some people are woefully lacking in both.
Very true. Yeah, very true. And that's, but one place I have heard it, and I've seen this several times. One reason a lot of companies take people out to lunch. Mm-hmm. they want to see how they interact with servers, people that would have no impact per se on them getting the job, because they want to see how they treat other people. And I do know that to be one of the that's one of the reasons a lot of people want to take people out to lunch, their candidates out to lunch, so they get to see them outside the work area where they have their boundaries up, so to speak, or they're see a little bit more of the person themselves.
Yeah, they let their guard down when they're out to lunch.
That's a Samuel Johnson quote, actually. The true measure of a man is how he treats someone who can do him absolutely no good.
Excellent. I didn't know the quote, but it kind of sums the whole thing up.
Yeah, I've always liked that quote.
That is there, I guess, is an area where they are looking for the empathy issue, or at least that you have some pretty good people skills, which that qualifies as empathy to some extent too. I know when I was actually at the company where Jeff and I worked, I was sent to a course in New York, and several people that I worked with had to fill out a questionnaire about me before I went. And one of the things that came up, and actually I expected a lot of different things, but the one that surprised me the most was a lot of people didn't feel like I was empathetic enough. And after I thought about it, I could see to some extent. I know one day a employee that I was working with, we were trying to get a machine to work that never did. And Jeff knows what machine that
I
is.
I sure do.
And he was coming down with a cold and wasn't feeling particularly well, but I talked him into staying and keep working on it. And he told me that I reminded him a lot of his football coach, who, when he got hurt, told him to rub some dirt on it and shake it off. And maybe that was a little less empathetic, but as an engineer, and I was kind of wearing my engineer hat more than my manager, I saw a problem that needed to be fixed, a job that needed to be done, and I wasn't going to let one of my employees' colds slow me up, so to speak, or stop that process. So I was probably a little less than empathetic that day.
So what about the how it plays together? I mean, so we say that engineers are an analytical animal, right? They're meant to solve problems. They're meant to produce a product, reduce costs, whatever their job might be. But I guess the real question is, does that mean that you can't be both? Is it possible to be both? And I think Jeff, you found a study about this, right?
Yeah, there was a study out of Case Western that talked about that.
Sounds familiar.
you're quite familiar.
My alma mater.
Talked about the fact that when we fire up the neurons in that part of the brain that's involved in analytical cognition, that our ability to be empathetic decreases. And if we just try to be empathetic, then our analytic abilities go down. So there's some neurological basis for the fact that if we're acting like engineers and being analytic in our thought, that we can't be empathetic at the same time.
I can see some I can see that, because as a manager, I think your managers are somewhere in between. They're not being a totally as analytical as an engineer is working on a setting or designing a machine or something like that. But at the same time, they're a little more empathetic than that individual is too. So that kind of makes some sense to me.
It's an indication, though, that it's not that engineers are just, again, cold-hearted bastards, but that there may be some basis, if we're tuned to doing analytic thought, that we may have detuned our empathic abilities.
But not, I don't think it was intentional detuning. It's just something that happened to evolve out of the analytical work.
Right. It's interesting from a biological perspective because, you know, you think about empathy in general, right? And really altruism in general. If you look at, you know, the human species, there's no reason we should care about each other. There's no reason we should help each other, especially people that aren't our own, you know, genetic line, right? That's the, kind of the whole evolutionary biology thing. But there's actually a whole discussion about altruism and how it's actually, you're trying to help the entire population along. That's kind of the whole thing. And I just wonder about how that actually interplays with the fact that you're trying to help the whole population along, but why do you have to turn off logic and reason in order to do all that stuff? And maybe it's just that sometimes you have to do things that go against logic and go against reason, even for people that you're not related to and have no necessary reason to care about.
Well, I think that's true as an engineer. Why should you spend... I think of the time that is, quote, wasted, and I see this myself, especially as a working as I do as in the business that I'm in, where a lot of people spend a lot of time standing around the water cooler, so to speak, or the coffee machine, mm-hmm. talking about who's going to win the Super Bowl. And is that truly a waste of time, or is that something we truly need for our bonding and improves our ability to work together? I think if you cut that out, that's probably one of the things I miss most about being here alone, and not totally alone, but I spend a lot of time alone here in my office, and I think I miss that a lot. Not because I'm not interacting with people as much as I used to.
Huh. Yeah, it's interesting because you know, as we move into like a freelance economy, as we talked about on other shows, then that reduces across the entire population of working people, right? And like you said, it's not just a waste of time. It's also there's a purpose to it, right? I mean, you're more likely to work an extra 2 hours when, and maybe even miss part of your kid's baseball game in order to finish a report, because it's not just your boss, it's your friend, right? Or it's your coworker that is also your friend. You know, you're doing things that there are these emotional attachments where you want to help people that you know and that you care about, because it's not just work. If it was just work, well, 5 o'clock comes, you know, we'll cut it off today and we'll get to it tomorrow. They'll be able to wait, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's very true. I think that's probably why a lot of managers want to be liked, because they feel like that they can get people to work harder for them. And I think there is some truth to that, although there's a downside to that. There's a danger in that also. So it's a fine line you have to walk. I know one of the main problems I've seen in business as more women have moved up the management ladder. Women, when they're very fixed on completing a project or completing something, and they don't show the empathy that that you expect from a woman, which I think people expect more empathy from women, that people find that, and especially other women seem to find that much harder to deal with. They find that hard to deal with, that when they see a woman with a lot of drive and very focused on a task and not being very empathetic, very, very hard for them to deal with sometimes.
Right. It's not a right or wrong. It's just a different from norm. And that, and just as much as if there was a truly, you know, very empathetic man who, you know, didn't push limits in a managerial role, and, you know, that kind of thing would be just as, it'd be different, but it's not wrong. Right. There's benefits to doing the opposite of what's expected as well.
Yeah, I know when I worked in the military, I probably shouldn't use this phrase, but they called it the big swinging dick principle, which if you weren't a big swinging dick, you were nothing in the military. So
right. Of course, dick being another name for Richard, right? A big swinging,
yeah, exactly.
Richard.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. Of course.
And right. The military, of course, had a lot of euphemisms like that, but right. We won't go into very many of them tonight, I hope.
Well, another interesting thing about leadership, I mean, military is very strong, you know, hierarchical structure and leadership structure, right? And there's some really interesting research about CEOs and moving up the executive chain, right? I mean, there's management and there's middle management, and then you start getting up in the upper echelons of management, and it starts to get very competitive, and possibly, you know, like you get detached from a lot of the everyday activities and the engineers and everything like that. But there's been a book that came out recently called The Psychopath Test: A Journey Through the Madness Industry, and interestingly, it said the incidence of psychopathy among CEOs is about 4%. And so it's interesting because we're talking about this as, you know, engineers being successful by having empathy. But as you move up the chain, it seems that it can be beneficial to actually remove that, you know, to actually move out of the empathetical side and move into this cold calculating side, because you're no longer dealing with people so much as you're dealing with reports and shareholders, and they don't care anything about money, right? I mean, like, so there's that side of it.
Yeah, very true. I've seen that. That's, yeah, one of the reasons executives have their own lunchroom and their own bathrooms in their office and all that type of thing. It isolates them from the people.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about laying off, you know, you see news reports about laying off 10,000 people at a time, right? If someone was a truly empathetic individual, they would feel the pain. You know, they all say that, oh, this hurts me as much as it hurts me to do this. It hurts me as much to do this as it does all of you that are losing your jobs, but not really. I mean, come on. But in the time of layoffs, right, when you're laying off swaths of people, if you truly felt that pain, there'd be no way you'd be able to bear it. I mean, there is an inherent role of a non-empathetic individual in an executive role there, because it might be necessary for the company's survival.
Yeah, I remember as a director one time in a rather large medical company, and I was talking to one of the vice presidents because we were having a problem we were trying to fix. And basically, the vice president told me, if you don't get this fixed, I'm going to fire you. And I said, well, that's not quite fair. I didn't cause the problem. It was really your decision that caused the problem. And he said, yes, I understand that. But the problem is, it'll be a lot easier for you to get a job, another job at this level, than it will be for me to get one. So there wasn't a lot of empathy there.
I can't imagine.
Even though he agreed with everything I said.
Well, that's interesting. So we mentioned earlier that Asian cultures differ from American cultures. Jeff, you had posted something about European cultures and how that might differ. What was that about?
I'm trying to remember what it is I said about that. I don't remember.
Linköping University?
Oh, okay. That's study. Okay. Well, that's not so much. It's simply in the European Journal of Engineering Education. Really didn't have anything to do specifically with European. But let me attack that what we're on for just a second, and that is, I did read a book a number of years ago called Thick Face, Black Heart, and it sort of talked about an Asian perspective on dealing with life's troubles and tribulations. And one of the things I remember from that was the thick face was the idea that you basically had to have a thick skin to criticism that was coming. And the black heart part was that you want something, when somebody's really skilled at something, you want them to be operating without a lot of emotion, without a lot of empathy. So, for instance, there's an article that I saw that you mentioned CEOs being at the top of the psychopathy chart. As I go down through those, number one was CEO, number two was lawyer, number three was media, number four was salesperson, and number five was surgeon. And
hey, we didn't even make the list. What are we talking about this stuff for?
And I noticed surgeon because you want, if somebody is cutting into your heart, you want them to be as dispassionate as possible. You want them to be thinking nothing of the pain that suffering. You want them to be thinking only, am I correctly making this incision? Am I correctly making this stitch? You want them to be completely separated from the emotions of the moment. And so I think that engineering is a lot like that in a lot of cases. You want the engineer thinking only about is the bridge being correctly designed? Is the strain gauge being correctly sized? You don't want them thinking about how this will make them feel at the end of the day, or how this will make their boss feel at the end of the day. You want them to be doing the job to the best of their abilities.
Well, there's a fickle balance there, though, right? I mean, you wouldn't want to tell someone, okay, design this bridge because your wife's standing in the middle of it right now.
Right.
And if you don't design it right, she's going to fall. But at the same time, you do want to, there is a certain degree of fear in design, right? You want to make sure that you are testing well enough, you are verifying your results, you are staying up on journal articles and everything else. Not like it's like a healthy fear, right? It's just an anxiety about protecting the public, right? So you don't want it so specific that, you know, you design a harness for the person standing in the middle of the bridge because that, you know, is told you is your wife. But at the same time, you want to make it safe enough so that all of the tolerances are met and you're using good enough materials, right? There is a balance point, but I understand what you're saying. I know with surgeons, they don't allow you to operate on family members because you might take drastic steps that could cloud your judgment. So
right.
I think
so. If you look at those who are least likely to show signs of psychopathy, as I go down that list, number one is care aide, number two is nurse, number three is therapist, number nine is doctor. So here are people that are operating in the medical field. But these are people that you're communicating with. You're sharing your symptoms. You're sharing your problems. You want someone who is going to be open to your emotional state, as opposed to the surgeon who's, you know, high on the psychopathy list. You don't care if he doesn't feel your emotional state.
You hope he doesn't. Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting, though.
So I'll jump back now to what was not a European perspective, but the article out of the European Journal of Engineering Education, which is the one I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, that said that the empathy in engineering students was lower than it was for students studying in other fields. And so one of the – obviously that is sort of the major takeaway, why do engineers have less empathy? But the other point was that they talked about there's a gap between the knowledge, skills, and characteristics that a graduated person is expected to hold and what different stakeholders believe they actually have. So Jim talked earlier about companies not asking specifically about empathy, perhaps because they believe that someone who's gone through an engineering curriculum should have these skills, but they're in fact never taught. We never talk about empathy in the engineering curriculum. We never practice empathy. In fact, we discourage it. And so it's not surprising that graduate engineers come out with a lack of skills and, you know, teamwork and communications and a lowered level of emotional intelligence that we might expect of someone who's a four-year graduate.
I still, even though we're having this discussion, wonder if whoever drew that connection is correct. I'm talking a couple days ago, I was talking to a person with the company that holds quite a bit of my money, my future, so to speak, and they wanted me to invest in the stock market. And I was explaining why I don't trust the stock market anymore. That's why I invested in bonds and relatively safe investments and not very much in companies. And, but he was just doing the hard sell thing, you know, look how little money, look at the money that you're losing, inflation. And you need to be in these stocks. You need to be churning and burning and paying us our $100 fee constantly, or otherwise you're not going to have any money left for retirement. And this is not a person with a lot of empathy.
No, especially with money issues, right?
Yeah, and I'm going through my divorce. Okay, here's what I need. This is what you're going to get. I've only got so much time to work on your thing. Good luck. So it's not a lawyer with a lot of empathy. And I just think about how often I come across it. I just had my furnace fixed. And it was 18 below zero and a 35 wind chill here Tuesday. And what was the guy that was fixing my furnace talking about the whole time? The fact that he'd been on call all weekend and he was exhausted. he didn't really care much about whether I was freezing to death or not. He just cared about how quick he could get the furnace and go home and go to bed. So there wasn't a lot of empathy there. But you've run across, you know, a lack of empathy quite often in a lot of areas. It's not just a automotive repairman. I see it all over the place, and I don't know how you can hone in just on engineers with a wide variety. And look in the stock market and the people doing hedge funds. If they had any empathy, I don't know how they could do hedge funds. That's personal, but so.
Well, there are studies that show that today's college students are more likely to lack empathy than previous generations. So there is some sort of generational issue here.
Yeah, that's true. I believe that totally, especially when I talk to my teenage kids. Their comment is, I tell them how rough I have it, and then they go, well, look how rough we've got it. We didn't have to go through any of that. We didn't toughen up. You gave us everything we want. Therefore, you know, it's your fault. So I don't know. It's this whole empathy thing is very difficult to define and work through, I think.
Well, let me quickly just state that empathy, we all associate empathy with being some sort of ability to judge or acquire or interpret the emotions of others. But I'll say that it's distinct from other issues like sympathy, which is you have a desire for someone else to feel better, but you don't necessarily have to understand what their emotions are. You recognize they're feeling bad, but you don't have to interpret that feeling in order to want them to feel better. That's sympathy. You can have pity. You feel sorry for their emotions, but again, you may not necessarily understand their emotions. So empathy is distinct in that it's assessing the emotional state of others and also being able to assess what that means to their goals and their motives. So if you, with that specification sort of put around this box of empathy, Chris, you had noted that there was in Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, a habit that's sort of related to this idea of empathy.
So number five is in the highly effective people, the seven habits of highly effective people is seek first to understand and then to be understood. And basically that's the concept of basically active listening, mm-hmm. right? So active listening is something that Jim mentioned before with salespeople, where they are taught to not only receive information, and I think this is actually part of the influence book that we mentioned in a prior episode as well, where not only do you receive information, but you also repeat it back to the person so that they know that you're receiving it properly. But so you receive the information and you process it, and then you use that in your actual response to the other people. I mean, it's just a basic way of listening and responding to people. And really this has implications in a whole lot of engineering fields because, you know, if your first priority is to understand what your customer needs, right? If you're on a customer visit, you're going to try and actually figure out what the problem is and dig down into it before you start solving their cursory problems. So as an example, if they say, well,
I disagree with the solving problem part. And that's where engineers get into a lot of trouble. You actually don't have to try to help solve the problem. You just have to acknowledge the fact they have a problem and you care about their problem.
But eventually, wouldn't solving come in there? I mean, that's the thing that...
Solving's actually very, very dangerous, and you learn that early in management.
Interesting.
Could you
expand on that more?
You don't want to solve the problem because you usually can't. I can't solve the fact that an individual's wife is now sleeping with his brother and he can't handle that. He's having trouble handling that. A guy's father beat him up when he was a kid and now he's having problems relating to his own children because of it. I can't solve that problem. Right,
but what about like work problems? Well, like, okay, so what if he comes? What if you're on a site visit and you're trying to figure out a new product, right? So I go to him and I say, well, what are your measurement needs? What do you need in an industrial setting? And he says, well, I need a 12-bit ADC converter. Like, I can't solve that. I can't go and design one for him. Okay, that's what I meant.
That's not
requiring
empathy. That's just requiring a simple solving of a problem. That's more of an analytical issue.
Well, maybe not though. Because okay, so someone comes to I go to talk to someone, right? And I don't go on customer visits very often. But if I go to talk to someone and they say I need a 12-bit ADC, right? And this ADC being an analog to digital converter, they need to measure something, right? The empathy there in a work setting, and Jim, I do agree with you in the personal setting that, yeah, people don't always want those problems solved. They just want to talk to someone about it. But in a work setting, sometimes even, people will say, I need this thing, right? And maybe I can't deliver that. Maybe I can't even, as an engineer, I can't design that. But the empathy there would be, well, what are your real problems? I mean, like, do you really need to measure that? Do you really need to measure it, you know, a million times a second? Or are you just saying that because you think that? And the empathy there would be actually understanding what they really need and then designing to that real need instead of the perceived need. That would be the empathy in the engineering, like marketing side of things.
See, I see that as more of analytical than empathy.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I would say that if they're demanding something that's just totally ridiculous. I sat in a meeting one time on we were having a discussion of infant formula, and they were the head of marketing was telling me basically I had my head up my butt because I couldn't give him what I wanted, and I was trying to explain why. And I told him, I said, hey, you know, if you give me enough money and enough time, I can put a can of infant formula on the moon, but is it really worth it? And, you know, he was looking for something that was virtually impossible because he just thought that it would be really cool. And I was, you know, now, what I said wasn't very empathetic. I probably should have approached it a lot different. But a few months later, he was fired. But anyway,
I think the empathy inside that situation, though, is, you know, someone who's trying to look good or impress his boss or whatever that is, right? There are times where you can pick that out, and you can understand not just the technical requirement, but I'm trying to look good. I'm trying to make this product look sexy. I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to make a big impact in my company so I can get a promotion. Like, you can suss those out of conversations, I think, with people. And actually, you know, if you identify it and then relate to it, right? Everybody wants a promotion. Everybody understands that need to, you know, deal with a boss or a superior like that.
Well, see, now I think you're getting into empathy because now you're not working on a specific number or, you know, a 40 megahertz converter. Now you're taking a bigger picture, and this is where empathy, I think, does come in. And I agree with you here. I just don't agree with you when you're dealing on engineering specifics.
Right. So people instead of numbers, then it,
yeah,
then it
people
stays
and motivation. What's lying behind it? Let's talk for a while and figure out, you know, why do you need this? Because I've sat in an awful lot of marketing meetings in my career, tons of them, more than I like to think about sometimes. And Jeff will back me up on this. Marketing people can be just so far off of out in left field that it's pathetic sometimes. And you've got to try to figure out what's motivating them, what's the problem they're trying to truly solve and everything. And to work it out to the point where there actually is a potential for a solution. More than just working on a number, you know, of a fixed product.
Yeah, but you want your marketing people to be empathetic to the customer. You want them to feel like, hey, if I had a device that would, you know, work equally well in the heat of the tropics and on top of a Swiss Alp, so it was temperature independent and they could use this product wherever they wanted. And so the marketing person comes to you, Jim, the engineering manager, and says, we need a product that is temperature independent. And you go, there is no way that, you know, the electronics in this thing can be perfectly thermally independent. It can't be done. You're being an engineer and he's being a marketer. What's the problem with that?
You're seen as, the engineer is seen as an obstructionist and not, and not a team player, which I've been accused of more than once in my career. But part of that too is then you've got to ask the marketing person, where did they get this criteria? I think Steve Jobs has probably proven better than anyone that focus groups really don't work because the customer truly doesn't know what they want.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah. And from that viewpoint, it's hard to be totally empathetic because you know that marketing person's blowing smoke or just guessing, and very often that's the case.
Right. So,
but still, you have to work with that.
That was the basis of my thing too. I mean, because if you're sitting in a meeting and someone says, "I need this," right? I need this. And you know that a focus group said the same thing, and you're like, there's no way they need this. That's when you have to dig deeper. It's just the empathy takes more work, right? It's easy to listen to what people are saying they need versus, you know, testing out ideas and then probing and finding out what's actually the motivation behind all that. That's when the empathy comes in, I think.
Yeah, definitely. See, that's where you and I, we started out apart. Now we're coming together. And I think that's probably one of the reasons engineers are seen as not empathetic, because very often, you don't need a 40 hertz generator. You need a 60.5 hertz, and it's going to cost you $500 more. And the marketing person says, I can't afford this on my project. I didn't allocate the money, or the project manager, or whoever it is. And so, and they see you as not being empathetic. So there's, again, we're, you know, dealing with that.
So we engineers are, part of our problem is we're constrained by the universe around us?
I think we're constrained by reality more than a lot of other people. And that makes us appear to be a little less empathetic, yes. Yeah.
So having a lot of experience dealing with these situations, do you have any advice for those of us that find ourselves in meetings with unreasonable marketing managers or bosses who are asking for outrageous things that seem technically impossible? Any way to diffuse it or to deal with it or to go with it?
Well, one of the best ways I've found, and again, I was working a manager, or, you know, director, vice president level, whatever, which makes this a little easier, but go out with the marketing, take the marketing person to lunch. Mm-hmm. Sit around, talk for a while, see what's really motivating them, what their problem is, and try to approach it from a different perspective. Get to be kind of friends with them, so to speak. I used to do this once in a while, or do it with people, especially in R&D, who had unreasonable requests. Get to be close to them, get to know what motivates them, type of thing. And that and that improves your empathy too, because then you care more about them as the person. They care more about you as a person. Therefore, you're both got mutual empathy going, and it makes life a lot easier sometimes.
Yeah, it softens your starting position in negotations, right?
Yeah,
it's not like,
and maybe
I need $1 million for this project.
Already there, it just allows you to understand each other enough that you can, soften that position eventually, which started out as being ridiculous or impossible.
Right, you can actually start at the reality situation and be like, and then when they reject you, be like, Mark, come on, we both know here, right? I mean, like, yeah, it's. You're right. I think the interpersonal aspect there allows you to kind of get past the BS a lot quicker.
Oh, yeah.
And that is very helpful.
Yeah. And that's where you can create some empathy. You end up creating it for each other, and makes it a lot makes the working relationship much easier in that respect. I know there was one marketing person that his thing is always was, that's not acceptable or something. Every other word was, that's not acceptable. And finally, I got him alone one time and explained to him, if he told me that one more time, I was going to choke him like a chicken. And he quit saying.
Is that empathetic?
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of empathy there for other people who are tired of hearing
shades
it.
Of gray.
Yeah. You know, it's that, a lot of times it's just that one-on-one that really works and solves the problems. Why can't Congress and our president solve their issues? Well, there's a ton of reasons, and part of it is we have power blocks and no one's getting together and talking through things and working through them, but like they used to.
Right. It's interesting hearing about actually historically about congressional leaders and stuff, and you hear about them like going out and having drinks together and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, wow, that doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah, they used to play golf together, and they do a lot of stuff together. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, so like you said earlier, the interpersonal benefits of getting to know your coworkers, you know. Even I know personally, I had someone in my workplace where, you know, they would talk very loud and personally it just really irked me. And then I ended up moving where I was sitting, you know, just remove that completely from the situation. And then I got to know the person a little better, and I know them now and I like them, and you know, it's just a much better situation. You know, when you remove the conflict from it and you get to know the person, then that there's a big benefit there.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting about this whole area of empathy is that it seemingly is something that can be learned. I mean, even if we have a lack of it, it's not like we're unable to strengthen that ability.
Yeah, but we won't learn it from books, and we won't learn it from the internet.
No, but there are people like occupational therapists and you know, psychologists and everything else. There are actual programs for this kind of thing, that do help that kind of thing. And really, there's personal training that you can get as well. I mean, there's life coaches and other type of things.
But how many people are going to do that? Because most people, honestly, I think probably believe they're, unless they're a sociopath, they believe they're, and even probably sociopaths believe they're empathetic enough. They function in society, therefore they're empathetic enough. So
yeah, it's very possible.
How many people seek out that kind of help? Not very many, I don't think, because I don't think most people see that they have a problem or an issue.
Right, but our listening audience to this podcast is the top of the barrel, the A1,
the proactive group,
insightful, forward thinking. So they'll all get it.
I think even recognizing the fact that this is a crucial skill could, you know, even if you're just sitting in conversation, right, and you're like, oh, well, you know, what the hell do I care about Bill, right? wait, should I?
And you should be
maybe
care
I should
about
care,
Bill,
right?
If you work with him.
But maybe I should. I mean, yeah. maybe this is an important thing. Maybe the reason for my conflict with him is not based on, you know, a genuine disagreement or so much as just a lack of understanding, a lack of empathy. Jeff, you had posted some interesting things about autism, right? And autism is a very big topic right now in the United States. And across the world, actually. I mean, there's a rising level of cases, and there is a high incidence with engineering. I mean, it just seems like the skill sets seem to, and maybe this is the topic for another show as well. But you know, it does seem like many of the characteristics of the lower side of the autism spectrum do seem to fit well with engineering, and those same characteristics also seem to usually lack empathy.
Yeah, that's one of the characteristics of autism is this lack of empathy, the lack of ability to understand the emotions of the other person. And so those who are able to deal with their autism often can do so systematically. That is, they learn certain cues to look for, certain facial cues, certain reactions, certain shifts in speech, that they recognize systematically as being a cue that's, you know, there's a shift in emotion here, but it's not something they feel inside. They don't have that empathy. And so it's interesting that the statistics seem to indicate that as we have especially more female engineers, and so we have couples of engineers having kids, those who have engineers as parents, those who have engineers as grandparents seem to be about twice as likely to have autistic children as those who don't come from the engineering profession. And so that's, you know, exactly what that tie is, whether it is there's something about engineers that make them less empathetic to begin with. And so when you join multiple engineers together, they have children that have an even greater lack of empathy. It's hard to say. I mean, there's just so much about autism that we do not know at this point. So it's hard to say exactly what is the cause that seems to be this correlation between engineering parents and autistic children. But it is interesting that this lack of empathy, which seems to be distinct, seems to be noticeable in the engineering profession, is also playing itself out in the number of children that are being born with autism.
The other interesting thing is that, you know, technology, which is, you know, the realm of many engineers, is also actually helping autism. There's actually programs out there now where there's, I've seen an article about computer programs that help autistic children actually recognize facial expressions and help with that training we mentioned earlier, right? So, you know, it's low cost training in this case with a computer. I saw another thing where there was actually, the person was wearing an apparatus that had facial recognition for whom they were looking at. And it actually recognized the face for the person that was wearing the equipment, and that actually helped them, you know, determine what the other person was feeling, which is kind of weird. I mean, it's kind of an extension of, it's like an emotional extension of a human being, but
that's
at the same time,
really technology. Empathy, is it? I mean, it's...
No. It's just the cues that allow empathy, right? And
okay.
So the inability to actually recognize those cues is kind of the precursor to not feeling any of this stuff, right? If you don't know that someone, if you're saying something upsetting in a design review, right? If you're saying, well, your design is crap, you know, and I've had this, I'm sure lots of listeners have had this, your design is crap, you missed this, 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 and this. You know, if you're talking to a new engineer and their face falls, you might, feeling empathetic about you know their first time at a design review, you might actually soften up a little bit, and oh well, maybe you know you can work on this stuff and we can talk after the meeting instead of continuing to blow through it, right? Someone that doesn't understand those cues would just keep blowing through it and then maybe break that connection, so that then the older engineer that's critiquing the younger engineer, then there's no possible for future collaboration because of that initial interaction.
Yeah, this is interesting, partially because I'm going back and thinking about sociopaths. and one of the characteristics of sociopaths, they're brilliant at figuring people out and using it to manipulate them. Mm-hmm. But they have absolutely no empathy. Virtually,
right. And it's because
virtually they're yeah. they have no empathy, but they have all the characteristics kind of you're talking about, in that they can read people like a book and use it.
Right.
Use it for their own nefarious schemes very often.
Right, because if you don't have these things naturally occurring, you have to learn them over time, right? You have to recognize patterns. And once you start to recognize the patterns, if they don't necessarily affect you, if they don't introduce any emotion in you, if you see someone's face fall and you don't personally feel, oh, well, they're probably feeling crappy now, I should let up a little bit. If instead you see that as an opportunity, then yeah, that's the difference right there. You know, most people will see, you know, someone's head dip and you see, oh well, they're feeling crappy now based on what I said, I should lighten up a little bit. Other people will take that and either run with it or manipulate based on that.
Apparently that's the difference between being an engineering manager and being a CEO.
You might be
that,
right
that
there.
A couple hundred grand.
Right. Well, one of the things that this is a stretch. Give me a minute, but I'll connect it back together. One of the things in my research is has been human movement, and so when we watch other people make movements, for instance, if I program a robot to make a movement, and or I similarly, you know, disguise the movement of a human so that, you know, you're not seeing the skin and the hands, but you're trying to judge whether the movement was made by a robot or made by a human. were very good at distinguishing the human movement. And in fact, when we pay attention to the human movement, we feel like we're making the movement ourselves. There are certain neurons called mirror neurons that fire. And so by watching somebody make this movement, we have the sensation of making the movement ourselves. And in fact, can sometimes improve our movement just by watching somebody else make those movements. And so there is similar type effect that goes on emotionally. When we pay attention to the emotions of others, if we pick up on their emotions, we start to mirror those emotions. We start to feel those emotions ourselves. And there's a book called Mirroring People, The New Science of How We Connect with Others, that I've seen on Amazon. I've not read it, but it sort of talks about the same sort of things, that by paying attention to the emotions of others, we can develop some of this empathy. And there's an entrepreneur out in Silicon Valley who's pretty well known, named Steve Blank. And he was involved early on in the semiconductor industry out there, and IC chips and microcomputers. And he has a post where he talks about having to learn empathy by emulating empathy. That is, he didn't really have the empathy to begin with, but he would go out and pay attention to these emotional cues. And by doing that, sort of this mirror effect took place where he learned, he began to feel the empathy because he was paying attention to what was going on. And he talks about sending out his other engineers, or the other companies he would work with. He would send out these engineers who likewise didn't really know how to be empathetic, but by emulating empathy, they eventually got the empathy.
Well, that's and there's research into that, and just the mirror neurons as well. I mean, people talking about when you see someone smile, often you find yourself smiling. And not only that, when you not only mirror others, but actually if you force yourself mm-hmm. to smile, that your brain actually reacts in the same manner. That your brain actually fires when you move those muscles, you actually release serotonin and all this other crazy stuff. I mean, like, yeah, the biology of it is just amazing, but. That's crazy that you can actually learn these empathetic behaviors. I mean, because the other side of it is like what Jim said, right? With a sociopath, you learn the behaviors, but you don't actually react to them, right? So you learn that when someone looks sad, that you pat them on the back, but you don't necessarily feel sad yourself, right? Empathy would be feeling sad yourself. A sociopath would just pat you on the back in order to get what they need.
Right. But do you not think somebody could be trained to be more sociopathic if you had somebody you looked up to, you know, or a mentor or a tutor or somebody that was, you know, when you saw somebody's face fall, as you were talking earlier, this person was jabbing you in the side and said, don't you dare let this opportunity go in for the kill when you've got the chance. And you were being told that over and over and over. Do you not think you would become more sociopathic over time?
Oh no, I think that can be learned just as easily. I mean, yeah, you can be dulled to emotions as much as they can be enhanced, I'm sure. Yeah. What do you mean by that though? I mean, so yes, I feel like I agree that you can learn the behavior in either direction, but
well, it's just my point is if we believe that somebody could become more sociopathic by being treated cruelly, why should we not believe that people could enhance their empathetic skills?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree that I agree that both can happen. I was saying that one can be genuine and one doesn't have to be genuine. If that makes any sense.
Right. Right.
So, but yes, I do agree it can be learned in either case.
One of the things that was interesting to me about this article was it ended up on Hacker News and it ended up on Reddit, and so you know, you can go and read through the comments. And I noticed that a lot of the commenters on Reddit really didn't seem at all surprised by these results. It was like, yeah, I'm not particularly empathetic. That's no surprise. I've known that for a long time.
I mean, the internet crowd, like Jim alluded to, is not necessarily, and especially the type that are, you know, commenting online, right? The pro users are the ones that are spending a lot of time online, right? So. It does fit an archetype, if not a stereotype.
Well, do you suppose that if we're empathetic to the needs of our listeners, that we might want to think about wrapping up this episode?
I think you're right.
Well, I think it's an interesting topic, just because it gets again to the nature of what engineers are like. You know, we've talked several times, Chris, about, you know, engineers are human. We have feelings, we have emotions, we have a desire to prove ourselves. And if this is a characteristic that seems to be typical of engineers, then we should be aware of it, and what the benefits of it may be at times, and what the limitations may be of it at other times.
I think in general, I think overall, you know, if you can develop these skills, if you can develop your emotional intelligence, I think, you know, you'll see a benefit in your career as an engineer. You know, you might find yourself shuffling into marketing or management or other things because you might excel at those things as well. But I think in general, you know, in a workplace where you're dealing with people, right? And any kind of workplace is dealing with people, like Jim mentioned as well. And if you can increase those skills, you're going to be in a good spot and you're going to be successful in what you do.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I think empathy does lead to motivational skills. And I think you need them both to motivate people. You need a certain amount of empathy. Maybe probably the CEOs that get to the top, they probably were pretty empathetic at one time. I really believe that. Knew how to work with people and that type of thing. But they tended to lose it as they moved up the chain, so to speak. It wasn't as important, so therefore they didn't exercise it as much. And it got soft, so to speak.
Yeah, certainly the shareholders rarely care about the emotional pain of laying people off, but they do appreciate the, you know, the 10% increase in stock value.
Well, not only that, and I know this to be a fact, the CEOs care because by the time they're a CEO, they have gotten huge stock options and all that, and they're looking at retiring. And the better they can get the corporate earnings up and the return on investment and all that type of thing, the stock prices go up, and so does their value,
right,
or their money that they can take into retirement. So it's very important for them, a lot more than the people below loving them or feeling like they care about them.
Yeah,
I mean, who in the world believes that Jack Welch cared about the thousands of people he laid off? There's a reason they called him Neutron Jack. But at the same time, he left a very rich person, at least until he got divorced, which right. Lowered his value quite a bit. But I would still like to have just a percentage of what he left GE with, but small percentage.
Right.
I'd be very happy.
Right, right.
But I'll bet at one time he was, and you can still see it on MSNBC and that type of thing, he can come across as a very empathetic, warm, charming individual.
But you believe that he doesn't feel the empathy, or he just knows how to control it in a different way?
I think he's somewhat lost it. He can control it, but I think too he's also lost his empathy over time. He starts seeing people as, and I've talked about that, but so many managers and directors and vice presidents, they start seeing people as chess pieces. And once you do that, your empathy is really gone in a big hurry, as soon as you view people's chess pieces to be maneuvered
right
on a board.
All right. Well, tell you what, Jim, we certainly appreciate your willingness to come on a second time. You're our first repeat guest on the Engineering Commons.
Well, I just appreciate you guys having the courage to have me back here a second time. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, until next time, people should check out some of the – we'll have a bunch of links in the show notes about the books referenced and the articles referenced. And if you're feeling particularly empathetic to our plight as podcasters, you can always review us on iTunes and tell us how much you love us or not.
I love it.
That's one. All right. Well, we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
The Engineering Commons is produced by Analog Life, LLC, and Engineering Revision, in association with Engineering.com. Theme music by Paul Stevenson. For more info, visit theengineeringcommons.com.